all things Greenbrier, maybe a little bit of pickleball there with our very own Daryl Ryder, brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Daryl, welcome to the show, buddy.
How you doing, Nick?
Doing very well. Oh, very businessy right out of the gate here, Daryl. Yeah.
Oh, it's a business trip down here.
Look at that. You're making business decisions like Eli Manning circa 2009. So let's start with the obvious news here. How significant is it that Deshaun Watson shut it down before the other three quarterbacks on day four of training camp today?
Well, it happened at the very end of practice, and it was very curious. And in fact, in the B-roll from practice that I had posted on X, I believe it's the last clip that I included there, was the rep from Watson where he kind of like went through the cones back and forth in a, you know, like QB mobility type of thing. And then he, you know, flipped the ball to Ken Dorsey, who then, you know, flipped it back to him to throw, and his throw toward the net was not great. I mean, it didn't even get to the net. It was short. And then, you know, the quarterbacks went through their reps, and then Deshaun took off, you know, his pads. It looked like it was the end of practice. Other position groups were kind of breaking down and, you know, getting ready to hop on the shuttles to get back up the hill. And, you know, the quarterbacks kept going through that particular drill two more times, but Watson did not. He had his pads off. And I'll be perfectly honest with you, Nick, I really thought nothing of it, you know, at the time. You know, all the indications from the Browns have been that, you know, everything's fine with Deshaun's shoulder, and, you know, his rehab program has been going well and he's on schedule. There are going to be some times where they're going to have him take it easy, but not nearly as much as they did during the offseason program. So I'll be interested to see what happens tomorrow morning with Deshaun. Does he get a full workload? Is it what I believe it to be? And that's just, hey, you know, practice is over and, you know, be, you know, just kind of, you know, decided to take the last two reps off? Or is there something more to this to where he has a problem in that shoulder again? So that'll be something I'll be following first thing tomorrow morning.
Daryl, you guys have been following the pattern of the offense so far with Deshaun and really the first teamers. Apparently, some have observed that there's a lot of short passing going on, not a lot of deep passing. Is that something you can second, that you observe? And what did you think about Andrew Berry's comments that that's just where the open receivers were through the first 3 days of practice?
Well, they're not doing a lot of competitive periods right now. So I would say kind of take some of that with a grain of salt. I'll be honest with you, Nick, I'm not reading a lot into these practices right now because, frankly, they're not doing a lot. It's a lot of individual and positional drills, a lot of hands-on coaching with guys. And I don't mean that as a criticism. It's just, it's the reality of what they're doing right now. We had the 7-on-7 red zone drill on Saturday. We've had a brief 11-on-11 period in which, you know, Kevin Stefanski kind of had to step in and say, hey guys, y'all teammates, let's take it easy. We're not, you know, we're not trying to get anyone hurt out of here. It's, you know, not the time to be dialing up the competition. But at some point, they've got to start firing some live bullets. Today was the first padded practice. It was in the rain. They moved practice up this morning to about 8:45. They were done by 10 o'clock. They're going to be in shells tomorrow. They'll be back. They'll do, I guess, some light stuff on Wednesday, which we are not partaking in. We're not part of that. We won't see whatever it is they're going to do. Thursday, they're supposed to be in pads. And then Friday morning's getaway day. It's, you know, get out of town. They'll practice at 9 a.m. I think they'll be probably done 10:15, and, you know, getting ready to board a plane to get back to Cleveland while we're all racing to jump in our cars and get back to Cleveland. So, you know, I expect things to really get dialed up once they get back to Berea, and then obviously with the Minnesota Vikings coming to town.
Daryl, looking at Andrew Berry's comments today, we talked a little bit about his stadium comments earlier today about, you know, if it was it was up to him. Big fan of the domed idea. They're not gladiators. They're athletes. I guess let's start there. Do you think that was what's the right word? Do you think that Andrew Berry says that if the organization doesn't want him to say it?
No. Look, I think the dome's happening. It's just a matter of going through the process to make it a reality. You know, certainly they've got to get the mayor of Cleveland on board. The Haslam spoke over the weekend about having dinner with him recently. They want the dome. Like, it's the worst kept secret in the world. The Cleveland Browns want to build a dome in Brook Park and have it open in 2029. You know, they're leaving the door open to a potential renovation. But do they really want 15 years of construction around a renovated stadium while the city figures out what they're doing with the lakefront? No. So it's a matter of going through, you know, the process here. Jimmy Haslam, I believe it was Jason Lloyd of The Athletic, to just point blank asked Jimmy Haslam two questions. He said, one, does it need to be a ballot initiative? And Haslam said, it's our understanding, no, it doesn't, which means voters are not going to be involved in this process, really. And then why not pay for it yourself? Obviously, the Haslams are worth billions upon billions of dollars. What it comes down to is the stadium economics in the country now at least have gotten to a 50-50 partnership around the country. It used to be the municipalities were having to, you know, since obviously Art Modell moved the Browns to Baltimore and turned them into the Ravens, you know, it's pretty much 100% on local governments to pay for facilities. And because the costs have skyrocketed for these buildings, not only for renovations, but for new buildings, it's now turning into a 50-50 partnership. And, you know, basically what the Browns are saying is you own the building. That's your responsibility. And we'll go ahead and pay for all the stuff that makes us the money, you know, the bells and whistles and the suites and stuff like that. And, you know, it's a pretty fair proposition in that regard. You know, the Browns are of the belief that the taxes generated not just from a dome, but from a $1.4 billion privately financed development that includes restaurants and hotels and shops and apartments and, you know, all these other things, you know, will help, you know, reimburse the public investment. You know, that certainly, I think, Matt, the math on that remains to be seen, but it's crystal clear that the dome is where the Browns want to go. And that's why, you know, when Berry, because let's be honest about it, Nick, when does Andrew Berry ever take a side on anything, right? When does he ever answer a question emphatically? When it comes to the business of the game, right, whether it's player contracts or anything else, and for him to come out today and say, yeah, you know, if I had my preference, it'd be a dome, but, you know, we'll be happy with, you know, whatever happens so long as it, you know, improves the fan experience.
So I guess we'll do the big picture of this. Between Andrew Berry and the Haslams, what else has stood out to you from what we heard this weekend and obviously today from that trio?
Well, you know, certainly the stability of the organization, they're moving forward with Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski. That's obviously uncharted territory for the Haslams and, quite frankly, this organization in a, you know, very, very long time. The expectations are certainly, you know, as high as they can be. You know, the Deshaun Watson thing, man, like, I still can't get over what happened on Saturday with him, or was it Friday, or maybe it was Friday that he talked. It's one big blur right now. You know, the way he presented himself, you know, that just really stood out because, you know, we've been pretty fair to him. And ever since he came back from the suspension and the disciplinary settlement with the NFL, you know, pretty much all the focus and attention in our media sessions, Nick, is 100% been football related. But for him to come back and play the victim card and rehash the, you know, his character was attacked and that, well, I mean, it's not our fault that there's hundreds and hundreds of pages of court documentation alleging things that you may or may not have done, right? And that, you know, you reached confidential settlements with the, alleged accuser, the accusers, right? So he's clearly still holding a grudge there and, you know, struggling with, you know, why, you know, people, I guess, still don't like him and things like that. And that was a little surprising to me the other day because, and I unfortunately got the ball rolling on that. I asked him and Aki was questioned about, setting aside the rehab aspect, you know, what is different about his approach coming into his third season with the Browns. And that's when he started off with the body mouth and, tuning out the noise, this, that, and the other, and talk about his character and being attacked and not giving to you know what's about what the critics think and things like that. And that really stood out to me, and I don't know that that's the right frame of mind he should be in, quite frankly.
So I saw Jason's article on this. I know you were on the morning show and had some comments on this. Is there something Deshaun could have done differently the last 2 years that maybe would have changed his feelings on how he's preserved?
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Or maybe changed his likability in Cleveland.
Yeah, I don't know. I certainly understand and respect that, you know, during that process that he was going through, not only legally, but with the league, he's limited in what he can say for legal reasons, right? But, you know, I don't know. I do feel like that he just, for whatever reason, he wanted to get that off his chest on Saturday. And I just, let's be honest about it, Nick. If he goes out and he, you know, wins and he plays extremely well, like, that's what everyone's going to be talking about. So, I guess the answer to your question is, be available, be on the field, and play well when you're on the field.
Daryl, looking to Nick Chubb, we're kind of all over the place with expectations for when Nick will be back, how the Browns are going to handle this. If Nick is unlikely to be ready for the first week or two, does it make most sense for the team to open up a roster spot by putting him on the PUP list, or do you think if they only expect him to miss the first week or two that Nick will be on the active roster but maybe inactive?
Well, I'm not all over the place. I don't expect them to see him the first couple of weeks of the season. I really don't. He's the other day when he was doing the post-practice sprints, it looked good. He looked great, right? He cut a little, but like, there's a ways to go. I think Andrew Berry said it best today when he was asked about Chubb and his progress. There are still some things that have to happen for him to put on the pads and get back out there. So I think that the reason it's all over the place, Nick, everyone's excited to see him back, and every little thing he does, we're paying attention to. And it's all positive, but I just feel like the reality of the situation. Look, Jack Conklin had ACL and MCL. Chubb had the same thing, but Chubb also had some other injuries that required two surgeries to fix his knee. And Conklin isn't even back yet. So, you know, Conklin had the lesser of the knee injuries, and he's not back yet and ready to go. And Conklin's not out there doing anything that Nick Chubb is doing. So I just I'm thinking that if you see Nick Chubb by the second month of the season, that is the win. I will be pleasantly surprised if he's available in that first month of the season. I'm not hating. I'm just being very realistic about it. And I know the Browns are also trying to make sure that they don't ask Nick Chubb to do too much too fast.
Daryl, looking to the Guardians, coming off a very nice weekend, getting the series win over the Philadelphia Phillies, who had the previous best record in baseball, still have the best record in baseball heading into the weekend. 24 hours out to the trade deadline, are you on Gardo's watch to see if they'll make a move?
Well, everyone else is making trades in baseball right now, so I don't know, you know, what the holdup is. They might want to get on the party. They still need a starting arm. They need a bat. There's no question about it. You know, the offense is sputtered here a little bit, but you know, to their credit, man, they're finding ways to scratch out wins. That series in Philadelphia was real impressive. I know they got shut out. What was it on Saturday? But you know, they won Friday night, they won yesterday. They lead baseball and come from behind victories this year. But, I kind of feel like the front office owes it to that clubhouse to go out and do something to give them a shot in the arm and a legitimate chance come October. I do feel that way. I'm very skeptical that the front office is actually going to make that happen, though.
Daryl, how did these pickleball teams get decided?
Randomly.
Like out of a hat? Like, how do we do this?
No, they just started, you know, you and you. Yeah, that's kind of how it was done. Yeah.
But who just, like, did somebody point, like, was there, like, a figurehead at the Browns who did the drafting? I just want to know, because it felt like you put your body on the line, and it felt like, you know, maybe you were saddled. Who was your partner?
I was with one of the members of the PR staff. I had never played before. And look, I was probably, without question, I don't hide it, I was probably the worst player on the court.
Mm-hmm. Sounds right.
Again, I'm not hiding it. Mary Kay was phenomenal. Fred Greetham was great. Fred and Dan Murphy ended up winning the thing. Peter and Mary Kay ended up finishing second. I'm proud to say that I was Murph and Greetham's first shutout of the afternoon. it was fun. And, you know, I had so much fun that I'm going to try and find a way when I get back to Cleveland to play some pickleball. It's a fun sport. My eyes got open to something new. So I had a lot of fun, even though I wasn't very good. I got to make sure I get good, though. So next year when we do this, you know, I can you know, get a little payback.
How many teams were there?
I have to think about this now. There were like 8 or 9 teams.
Where'd you guys finish?
Oh, dead last. We didn't win. I did not win. I told you I was the worst player on the court. Like, I'm not hiding it. We scored a grand total of 6 or 7 points in 4 games where we went 0-4.
To quote Hugh Jackson, we own that. Daryl?
Yes.
Great stuff, buddy. Appreciate
you. I do. You bet.
Daryl Ryder there, renowned pickleball player on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.